I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from the KCVX studios in San Luis Obispo. Right now we're with John Sepulvedo, who's KQED's California Report host. Hi, John.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing great. So cool to finally meet you in person.
Oh, thanks. I really appreciate it. I'm glad to meet you, too.
Avid listener.
Oh, cool.
Tell us about the history of California Report vision and how it came about.
Sure. Well, I do know that it started when I was in high school, not to date the people who are still working on the show, but I'm 38 now, so I'll let the listeners do the math, mainly because I don't want to because I'll cry. But it started quite a bit ago, and you know, as an aside, NPR right now is looking at ways to do regional hubs, find ways to link up, for example, we're in the KCBX newsroom right now, find ways to link up KCBX and KQED and KPBS in San Diego and KPCC and all those stations.
Give us some specifics of how you hook up in
Totally. But I guess what I was going to say was NPR is doing that now, but this is something that KQED and the California Report did almost a generation ago, and they realized that there was a need for statewide coverage that kind of tied everything together. And so they launched a show that really focused on bringing pieces, and when I say pieces, I mean stories from around the state, putting them into to one program, and they put a label on it, the California Report. And our first host, Scott Schaefer, he really built this show. I still have the pleasure of working with Scott, and he is he's an amazing guy who has such a deep institutional knowledge and love of the state. And so he, along with Ingrid Becker, who is still on the show, and Raul Ramirez, who the news director of KQED, who passed a few years ago, really put together this statewide program that tries to unify what's happening in San Francisco with what's happening in San Luis Obispo with what's happening in Yuma. So I think that this effort is really important, and the specific ways we really kind of unify is we spend a lot of time talking to other stations and other reporters, and you know, that's why we're here at KCBX today, was really to try and get out there and get to know what's going on, and not just be able to run everything through KQED, but to connect, you know, a lot of the same issues that KCBX might have might be the same for KHSU in Humboldt. And so we can find ways to connect them using the power of KQED, which of course KQED, when I say the power, it's a huge broadcaster with a huge budget in relative to other stations. So we're really lucky that way.
When you talk about the California Report and KQED being basically the mothership, it's like a syndicate, right? I mean, it's syndicated where stations all around California broadcast the California Report, but it's generated by and from KQED.
Yes. Right. I mean, roughly, yeah, but I think of it more as a cooperative. And that, you know, we offer the show for free. We do have to run a credit. It helps pay our bills, and we have to. We have to run the credit in order so that I can get paid and the senior editor can get paid and all that. But also, more importantly, so our freelancers can get paid. If our freelancers around the state didn't contribute to our show would be really bad, and it wouldn't be a show, and I wouldn't have a job. So we want to make sure that those freelancers are paid, and we want to make sure we're getting stories from all throughout California. I mean, California has a bunch of different kind of microsystems, and we want to be able to pull from those different areas.
That's a good point, because as a listener, I really enjoy that diversity of voices, which you would not have if just you guys were doing it.
And that's the whole point, is like, I really believe in life, no person is an island. At least not a very interesting one. And the same with public media. I really believe that no station is an island, and we're all just as important as the next.
Let's talk about the overarching thematic breadth of the California Report. Politics, society, you know, whatever.
The one thing we're really good at, the California Report, and it's because of Scott Schaefer, is government and politics. In fact, we have a government and politics desk, and it's great. We don't really need to improve on that aspect, and I'm really interested in the other things, in addition to politics and government, the other things in society that make life worth living: arts, culture, lifestyle, technology. The truth is that while a lot of people argue about, you know, government and politics, as they should, you know, because people have strong values and opinions, the truth of the matter is that doesn't really matter, because it'll all change because of technology. We see that the society changes as technology changes. So where government is reactive, technology is proactive, and California is home to the world's technological center. The next form of human being, the next app we use, the next social media we use, the way we use our machines, virtual reality, artificial intelligence, robotics, biomedicine, biochemistry. We just found out recently that the first embryo was changed using CRISPR, the way that genes are changed, that was invented in Silicon Valley. Very evolution of human beings is going to happen in California. And so thematically, while we still take care and make sure our listeners are up to date on government and politics and what's happening with the latest breaking news like wildfire, we are really thematically looking at getting into these bigger questions because the next evolution of human being will likely happen in California.
Is there room for the kind of Charles Kuralt wholesome human interest story?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I love Charles Kuralt's work. It's funny that you call him wholesome, being that he had a double life for many years. With
that's under the radar.
But that's a really important part, and I'm glad, actually, that you brought it up. There is room for wholesome, but there is not room for wholesome's sake. Mm-hmm. And why?
So no feel good.
Not just for the sake of feeling good. I want, if it is a feel-good story, we want it to be told in all of its complexity. And I think, actually, I'm really glad you brought up Charles Kuralt, because here we have a guy who came in to people's homes every Sunday. And here's a gentleman who had a double life. This was a complex person. I'm not casting judgment on his double life or the fact that, you know, one family apparently didn't know about the other family and all that. But what I am saying is that human beings are complex animals. We are complex creatures. And the truth of the matter is no one is as simple as they present themselves on a Sunday morning. The priest, the pastor can tell you that. And so can the reporter. And so if we are going to tell a feel-good story, we want it to be in all of its glorious complexity. And also, the other thing is I'm challenging the audience sometimes to be uncomfortable, and in fact, to be comfortable in their uncomfortableness. We are a complex species. We have many contradictions. We are all incredibly flawed, myself more than most. And I want those contradictions and the very things that make us human to shine through in the stories we tell in the California Report. We don't always get the time to do that. I mean, we're trying to tell it in 7 minutes, but I do want us to always have that understanding that we all have a little Charles Kuralt in us, both the guy who came into your television every Sunday and the guy who had a double life and did things that he never told anyone. We all have those secrets.
I think what it is, it's just varying degrees of foibles of the human spirit and condition.
Absolutely.
Before we move on from California Report, anything that you can think of that you're most proud of, that you want to share about the California Report?
I'm most proud of our team. A, they have to put up with me, which is not easy. Ask my ex-wife. B, these are the smartest people I've ever worked with, and they're the most hardworking people who I've worked with.
So they're challenging you in a positive way.
Yeah, for sure. I think specifically of, for example, we have a producer, Polly Stryker. I've never met somebody so hardworking and so on the ball. And let me give you an example. You know, I'm not sure when this is going to be released, but we are recording this the day after President Trump announced his, by tweet decree, his ban on trans people in the military. And Polly, late in the night, while she's taking her son from school to home, or from camp, I should say, summer camp to home, she stops off to get a sound of rally in San Francisco. This is vital to make the show dynamic, and it's vital to make the show current and relevant to our listeners. And she's calling me to apologize that she's not going to be able to upload it as quickly as she wants because she has to stop and feed her son. And I'm like, my God, like, this is the type of ethic that is coming to the show. The same with Tiffany Kamhai. She's a producer, and she actually happens to be in the room right now. But she works incredibly hard and incredibly diligently to keep me on track. So I'm very lucky in the sense that I get to work with these people who are consistently and constantly showing themselves to be very smart, very hardworking, very capable, and very supportive. And again, no person is an island, and I'm really lucky that I have these people who make me sound a lot better than I am.
Let's move on to the bigger picture. Public radio is a medium nationwide. Mm-hmm. And as you know, I travel around the country, a lot of the Deep South, and one of the first things you get is, oh, NPR and the eye rolling and the liberals are here. Mm-hmm. We both know there is a huge bias or a huge slant in people's perceptions. I personally have no agenda. You know, mm-hmm. I'll cover, I told you I did the five Trump supporters the other mm-hmm, day. Mm-hmm. All is fair game to me. But let's talk about that implicit, implied bias.
Well, you know, unfortunately, it's not just NPR. It's when I was at CNN, I also got a lot of the same. We have politicized. So part of it is our own fault. We don't do a good job. As journalists, most journalists I know, and especially most public media journalists, especially, don't like to brag on themselves. And we don't like to tell our story. We like to tell other people's stories, which is runs counter to kind of what, you know, a lot of people think out there. So we are horrible at essentially telling the good story about us, telling us who we are as people. So that's the first problem. The second problem is for a long time we didn't respond. And when we did respond, it was in a kind of a weak and half-hearted way. This is nothing new, this attack on public media. This has existed since President Johnson signed the act that created the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And I can understand why conservatives have concern about the government funding media.
Haven't we done a pretty poor job of covering the conservative demographic?
I absolutely disagree with that.
Explain why.
1,000%. Let me finish my first thought, and then I'll get back to that, just because I my mind is slow like a turtle, and if I stop long enough, I'll just be stuck there. We need to do a better job of explaining not just who we are and why we work, but why we care. The why we care part is really important. Right now I'm hearing a lot. I'm 38 years old, as I said. A lot of my peers are, you know, kind of between the 28 to 45 age. And one of the things that I keep hearing, because we live in a different world, is we need to be more transparent. We need to be transparent about, you know, if we do have political leanings, we need to be transparent about who we do support. And I absolutely fundamentally disagree with them on that issue. I think we need to be transparent in who we are. My name is John Sepulvedo. I grew up in East County, San Diego, which is kind of a shithole. I hope you can say that on the
podcast.
Yeah. There was a lot to learn from it. I grew up in a time before there was social media everywhere, which is important because I really came to value as a teen the talking to people. And I grew up wanting to make the world a better place than how I found it. That's who I am. There is no conservative or liberal or progressive agenda in that. I think that we need to do a better job of telling that story of who we are to the public. And I challenge, public media has a horrible diversity problem. We don't want diversity for diversity's sake. We don't want to hire conservatives or trans people or minorities or progressives for the sake of just saying we can check that box off. We want to hire them because having their viewpoint expressed in the newsroom is vital in serving the public mission. We are public media. We're not, you know, kind of rich white people media. And so we need to be able to have those viewpoints at the table. Now, to go to your point about conservative coverage, I don't know if you've heard of, and I'm being facetious, the Tea Party movement. It was kind of this little thing that kind of took off. I was at the very first Tea Party rally that I should say that was in my region in Rome, Georgia, in early 2009. And I was there as a flag-waving member of the public media. And I covered the hell out of the Tea Party. I covered it from its rise in the rural outskirts. I covered it as it went to tax day that year. I covered it when Sean Hannity came to Atlanta. I covered it when the first national Tea Party convention happened in Nashville and Sarah Palin was the featured speaker. I covered the finances of it. I covered the people of it. I feel that I very much understand that movement, and we did justice into representing who they are. And we did that long before even Fox News did it. So this idea that we don't cover conservative issues is hogwash.
That's the perception, and you know it is.
And that goes back to the first thing, which is we keep doing what we're doing, which is covering these issues, and then we keep telling the story of who we are. The reason that media has been politicized is so that it can be discredited. To give you a great example, there were significant questions. There was an interview with Hans Blix, the weapons inspector during the Iraq War, and he came on to NPR. And he essentially said that he couldn't find anything. So instead of discredit Hans Blixer to say, offer some type of counter evidence. The Bush administration decided to come out hard again in that moment against NPR, and NPR responded. They did a survey about how many conservatives they had. There was this 2004 large survey. I had just started NPR, and there was this huge survey about, like, these are the conservatives we have. These are the high school educated people. These are the college educated people. And they basically showed that the people who are working at NPR tend to be white. They tend to be upper middle class, grew up in that area to middle class, to solidly middle class, tended to have gone to elite universities, didn't own guns. And I can tell you that's common sense. Mm-hmm. Most reporters I know don't own guns, regardless of whether they're in NPR or not. Most Fox reporters don't own guns. You're telling me John Roberts owns a gun? He might, but he doesn't keep it around that often because he's got two small kids, John Roberts of Fox News. So my point is that this idea that we are somehow more inherently liberal than other people is hogwash, and we've responded to these criticisms very meekly. And in typical NPR fashion, which is actually one of our attributes, but not on this particular issue, but generally we try to respond with empathy. That is what separates us as a media organization. And I'm not speaking for NPR. I don't work for NPR, but I'm saying as a public radio member, we are really bound by empathy. And instead of, you know, responding like, hey, go F yourself, that's not who we are. We're not biased in this way. We instead do this, like, self-examination. Well, maybe that is who we are. Should we, you know, that we're taking it incredibly looking at it. I'm a high school dropout. I'm a college dropout. I did not go to an Ivy League college. I have tattoos all over the place. Been to jail 3 times before I was 21. Grew up in foster care for my teenage years. I am not the typical public media person. And I know that I'm not the only one. My very first boss in Tallahassee, Florida, he was a conservative. I know he was a conservative because he used to talk about it on the news. You never heard about it when he was on the air. I have run into many people in public media who are not what you would call diehard progressives. We do a good job politically of representing the spectrum often. Finally, I would say that we really need to do a good job of seeking out voices that we might not expect to hear. And again, that goes to our diversity problem. So if we do those things, we'll be okay. But the attack on the idea that we're liberal is no more than it is on CNN or other outlets.
Okay, going forward, I know this is dart throwing, but the big concern, I don't know about you, but I'm asked all the time, is NPR going to be defunded? Is PBS going to go down? Mm. You know, going forward, what's your sense, what's your feeling on the horizon?
You know, I've been in public media for 12 years, and actually this ties, I should have mentioned this in the last question that I kind of went on about. If public media is defunded, it is going to cripple the system, not because it's going to hurt me at KQED, and not because it's going to hurt the WNYCs, or even maybe the KCBXs. Who it's really going to hurt are small rural stations in Alaska, Oklahoma, Alabama. These stations, for all the huffing and puffing in these conservative areas about it being too liberal, they know damn well that these stations represent the communities they serve, and they are often the only stations locally that represent the communities they serve. My question is what happens to Alabama Public Radio, which has just essentially taken over WHIL, which is the Spring Hill station in Mobile. It's the closest thing Mobile has to a public media station in that state. The WUWF in Pensacola is right next to it. My question to that is what happens to those small communities if it's defunded? And that's why you see guys, libertarians like Rand Paul, they know what this means to their constituents. Same with Alaska, Lisa Murkowski. You take away Alaska Public Radio, which most of the funding comes from CPB, and all of a sudden an entire network that state not just relies upon for news, not just relies upon for news on the mainland. They do things like tell Native families what the lunch schedule is for the week, and they plan around that. So this idea that they're going to take that away, it doesn't hurt me. I'll be fine. It doesn't hurt KQED per se. It hurts us as a system.
You think it's a possibility?
Oh, yeah.
You do?
I think it's going to happen.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
That's sobering.
I think it's going to happen because it's been a priority of certain members of Congress. And there's going to come a point where it slips in. Unfortunately, I've covered politics long enough to know that if certain people have enough willpower, they just keep banging, banging, banging. Issues don't just go away. This has been a concern in public media since I joined in 2004, and it will be a concern until one day that funding is stripped. It will happen.
That's depressing.
I look at it as an opportunity.
Upside?
Yeah, kind of, but I mean...
No, what is the upside if it's an opportunity?
Well, I think it's going to force stations to work together. One of the things that really disheartens me is to see locally these local stations fighting amongst themselves for the same resources. I'm not going to mention which stations that happens at, but we all know in the system, in the public media station system, who that is. We have to stop that. We have to find ways to work together. I mean, I look at West Virginia. West Virginia public media is a really good example. Scott Finn, first of all, I want to say, if anybody's listening, I know people are, but I'm saying, go write a welcome or a thank you letter to Scott Finn. That guy saved public media for West Virginia, and he had to do it through a lot of hard decisions. He cut staff. He had to do a lot of lobbying. He had to do something public media is not good at, which I was saying, which is tell the story of public media and who the people are. Scott Finn, at a time when the state lawmakers were looking at zeroing out West Virginia public broadcasting, he found a way to make sure that that was included. West Virginia without public broadcasting is not West Virginia. And so he found ways to that he was going to save money, but he also found ways to work with lawmakers. And I think that as bad as it will be if CPB is no longer federally funded, which right now it seems like it won't be. This is just my own belief that eventually it will be, no longer get federal funds. As long as CPB is federally funded, we are not forced to make those decisions that Scott Finn had to make. And I really think people should look at what he did. I think, first of all, they should praise him for what he did. I think we should be giving him the Leo Award at Prindy. And I think we should really be looking at the things he did as a system and saying, where can we do those things preemptively? Because he forced his organization to get lean and strong, and he had to make really hard decisions about letting people go. That I know were not easy for him.
And for the listener, Prindy Public Radio News Director.
Incorporated. Yeah.
Incorporated.
Yeah, yeah.
So now just one last thought. Let's say the funding is stripped, federal funding for PBS and NPR. Wouldn't it follow that there would be a populist grassroots rising of funding and support to fill that gap?
No.
That's a depressing answer.
I mean, it's a nice thought.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think so.
Wow.
I think, look, we live in a different world, and the idea, there is an expectation. We live in a world where people show their appreciation of value by paying for it. And I call it like an a la carte almost mentality. We might get funding for a bit. You know, CPB funding is taken, and then there's like maybe all the stations do some kind of Kickstarter type thing, which, by the way, we invented Kickstarter as a theory. I just want to put that out there. But regardless.
We meaning?
Public media system. In our fundraisers, we've been doing Kickstarters for years. I don't see that happening unless the stations have value. It is incredibly important that every local station not just be a repeater for NPR, that every local station look to expand both their arts and cultural programming, but also their newsrooms, if they have a newsroom, that they serve their local community. That is the only hope they have to surviving in the future. Not only surviving, but thriving. And we're seeing that the stations who do that are the ones who survive and thrive. But if there is any expectation that the public is somehow going to bail you out, no. You are going to have to go out and raise that money and show your worth every day.
John, only because I've interrupted your filing of California report today, I got to let you get back to work. Thank you so much for sharing.
Anytime. I really appreciate it. And thank you for doing this podcast. I think it's really important.
It's my pleasure. For further information.
The best, easiest way is to follow me on Twitter. I'm going to plug my Twitter, JohnLGC. But you can also just, you know, Google California report, and there's an easy email link right there.
We've been speaking with John Sepulvedo, the host of KQED's California Report. Thanks again, John.
Thank you, Tom.
Mm-hmm. My pleasure. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from the newsroom at KCBX, NPR affiliate, based in San Luis Obispo, California.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.